Good day, and welcome to the Cigna Eating Disorder Awareness Series conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. And at this time, I would like to turn the call over to Kate Harner. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for calling in to Cigna's 2014 Eating Disorder Awareness Series. My name is Kate Harner, and I'm a care manager on the Eating Disorder team with Cigna. Due to the format of the call today, you'll not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of the conference, there will be a brief five-question survey in which we are requesting your feedback on your experience of today's seminar. After this survey, you will be able to ask questions of today's speaker. A handout for the presentation is available online at www.cigna.com/eatingdisorders. Halfway down the page under the heading Current Topics, you'll see the link for today's presentation in blue entitled Treatment for Eating, Mood, and Anxiety Disorders. How to Gain a Life Worth Living. Again, visit the Awareness Series page online at www.cigna.com/eatingdisorders. Halfway down the page under the heading Current Topics, you'll see the link for today's presentation in blue entitled Treatment for Eating, Mood, and Anxiety Disorders, How to Gain a Life Worth Living. Please also notice the blue square in the top section of the page that you may click on to sign up for future seminars. It's not required that you sign up in order to attend each month. However, if you choose to sign up, you will receive email reminders for each month's presentation. Today I have the pleasure of introducing our speaker, Laura Schuster Efland. Ms. Efland is the Vice President of the Eating Disorder, Mood, and Anxiety Residential Program at Insight Behavioral Health. Today she'll be sharing information with us on the treatment of eating, mood, and anxiety disorders. Welcome, Ms. Efland.
Hi, thank you so much for welcoming me, Kate, and I look really looking forward to kind of getting this opportunity to share with you what we have been doing at Insight Behavioral Health for our treatment for eating and mood and anxiety disorders. I'm also a dialectical behavior therapist, and How to Gain a Life Worth Living is a core value that we hold true in dialectical behavior therapy for our patients who are really struggling to make gains in their lives, kind of really weighing the pros and cons of making those changes. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about what kind of brings us to the treatment of eating and mood and anxiety disorders. And if you just want to go to the first slide that starts with approximately 80% of individuals with eating disorders are diagnosed with another psychiatric disorder at some time in their life. And something that we have found with our patients that we treat in our residential and in our partial hospitalization and intensive outpatient programming is that it's not just eating disorders that we're treating, that there's an underlying issue, or once the eating disorder has been treated, that there is an underlying depressive, anxiety, or personality disorder. And so with that, you know, we've come up with many different ways to treat those underlying mood and anxiety disorders. And if you can just turn to the slide of the history of Insight, we were established in 2004 just as a primary eating disorder treatment center, and then until 2009, I started the Mood and Anxiety Program with our founder, Dr. Susan McClanahan. And then, you know, through that, we were also starting to have programming for binge eating disorders as well. And we have really started to believe in the 7-day-a-week programming for our patients, having programming, you know, Monday through Sunday so that if anyone was really struggling, that they wouldn't have the opportunity to relapse over the weekend and instead continue to gain support. And that's a huge part of our eating disorder and mood and anxiety program. And the reason is because in order for us to really make changes in our lives, we have to be consistent with the practice of these new skills and these new ways of approaching our life. And so, another thing is just wanting to look at the rationale for dual diagnosis treatment is just looking at the percentages and how high they are with co-occurring mood disorders, impulse control disorders. There's also substance abuse that I'll talk about later. That's also very much a co-occurring disorder for eating disorders, and that's something that we also treat. And the struggle with mental illness, you know, the struggle to be thin with eating disorders is that it is a serious mental illness, that it is a leading cause of death when it comes to mental illness disorders, that it's very challenging to find full recovery within our society because it's this constant obsession, this constant inundation with information about how to be thin. And, you know, with the help with, you know, the skills that we offer and the programming that we offer, what we're really looking for is to find armor, to find ammo, to really start to fight against that threat and to really remain recovered and within recovery. And sometimes it's hard to understand, you know, the severity of an eating disorder and that, you know, it is pervasive. It's something that can hold on for a long time. It can kind of seep into your lives when, you know, you're really feeling stressed out. There's, you know, changes within your life that were unexpected, losses and so forth. Sometimes the mental illness of an eating disorder is seen as like the Porsche, you know, well, at least it's not, you know, a different mental disorder that would, that others kind of have a stronger stigma towards. It's just an eating disorder. And so when we start to minimize it, we don't really start to understand, you know, that this is a very challenging thing to recover from. It's very challenging to remain recovered from. And so how do we kind of continue to build a recovery-based community, recovery-based support system? And a lot of that comes within, you know, the skills that are being offered. So with, you know, the mood and anxiety and eating disorder dual diagnosis programming, what's hard is the difficulty, like I was saying, with sustaining the progress. If you're, you know, familiar with Homer's Penelope story and that, you know, what she was, her father told her that she needed to create this woven tapestry and to work on it until when she was done, she would have to choose her suitor to marry her. So you'll see the three suitors in the background of this painting. And what Penelope did, because she did not want to marry these suitors, in the evening she would go back into the tapestry room and unravel all of the work that she had done so that she would never be done, you know, that her father would see that the tapestry would never be finished. And I think that that's a very common, you know, issue when it comes to eating disorders and mood and anxiety treatment, is that there's a lot of the treatment that helps us, you know, feel recovered in the moment, but then when we're alone, it's really hard to sustain that and to continue to practice it. And so how do you gain that support and how do you really work on it? And sometimes there's those underlying things like the mood and anxiety disorders of depression, anxiety, that kind of foster this urge to almost need the eating disorder in order to feel more balanced. So we're going to talk about that as well and things that we really work on in our programming and in our treatment approach that help with sustaining progress. And the disorders that are commonly treated for eating disorders is anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, binge eating. And for our mood and anxiety disorders, we see a lot of major depression, many different types of anxiety disorders, OCD, generalized anxiety disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, the phobias or panic, borderline personality disorders, and mood disorders such as bipolar 1 or 2. And bipolar 1 is more of the, you know, feeling of the mania and then those really low lows. And bipolar 2 is not so much of these manic phases, but just kind of these constant irregular moods and then this really, you know, low that has this, you know, sustaining feeling to it, trauma. And then the co-occurring substance abuse, and that is, you know, all of them are very common when it comes to the treatment of eating disorders. So the treatment approach, gaining a life worth living, you know, back to that really great solid understanding of, you know, we think that we're helping ourselves by trying to get rid of whatever the problem is in the moment by finding another way, you know, and that other way is typically behaviors that have to do with getting the anxiety to go away, helping our mood, feeling more in control about things, and that an eating disorder can really give us that kind of feeling that we're gaining that control, we're letting go of our anxiety, we're feeling better when we're feeling depressed. But actually, in the long run, it's not doing any of that, and it actually exacerbates and makes everything worse. And so with these treatment approaches, what we're doing is we're trying to sustain the long term, to really feel better in the long run, and kind of letting go of that quick fix and short-term kind of gains that we're looking for with our eating disorders. And so so what we're kind of looking at with the first approach, you know, just to kind of go through an overview, is that we do dialectical behavior therapy, which was founded by Marsha Linehan, and acceptance and commitment therapy, which is founded by Steve Hayes, and mindfulness-based interventions, which come from, you know, many different founders. But just kind of giving you some ideas as to how they work with the DBT and ACT. And then specific interventions that we use for our anxiety track, exposure and response prevention, body and yoga work, and for our trauma track, using a triphasic model, which is that is coined from Judith Herman, who is a psychologist who focuses on trauma. And so I'll talk about, well, what is a triphasic model and why do we need these three different phases in order to help someone move through those steps of understanding and starting to heal from someone's trauma. And then our substance abuse programming and how do we use the 12 steps. And then also harm reduction, you know, that within our eating disorder treatment, we're always kind of looking for ways to reduce harm, you know, the behaviors that we're using, how do you reduce the harm around them while also working towards healing, but in more of kind of a balanced way of doing that rather than feeling as though the only way is to be sober and sober today. So that abstinence model, harm reduction is more of a slow progression towards sobriety or towards complete abstinence of behaviors. So this really cute cartoon called The Dialectical Mind, this is kind of looking at these three different mind states that we use in DBT, and this is very important for eating disorders because we have what we call our emotion mind, and that's what is the ed mind. Those are the voices, or kind of not necessarily voices, but kind of that challenging thought patterns that we have about, you know, what is a good eating disorder and, you know, being good at our eating disorder versus, you know, what is recovery. And recovery mind is more the wise mind, that balance of understanding I'm struggling from an eating disorder and that logical mind, and it's not good for me, it's not helping me, and I'm actually getting, you know, I'm feeling even worse because of that. And how do you start to use that wise mind, the recovery mind, to find that balance of understanding eating disorder while also taking steps towards recovery and finding ways to help with recovery. So the mind states are very important because what it allows us to do is to let go of control in order to gain control. You know, that we think that control is going to help us in the moment, but control actually leads us astray. So we have to let go of that and accept help, accept change, accept a new way of doing things, and that in turn will help us gain control in the long run. So dialectical behavior therapy is comprised of these building blocks to treat severe, persistent emotional and behavioral difficulties. And we use it because what we're looking for is the middle ground. You know, we kind of see things in that black and white thinking, so we're looking for the gray. And this behavioral treatment is looking at the behaviors that are not giving us what we're looking for, and instead we're trying to make changes. And, you know, we all struggle with making changes. It is a human emotion to fight change. You know, it's kind of that human instinct to want to just stay in status quo, but status quo is never, you know, possible, right? Change is the only consistent thing in our lives. So how do we start to accept that? And a lot of studies have been starting to show that DBT treats multiple issues, you know, that we have many of the disorders that I've named in previous slides are all being treated with DBT. And the reason being is because there are specific goals of DBT that you are working with. You know, we have this cognitive dysregulation, not really knowing who we are, what we're thinking, what we want, what's important to us. And so what we're using in DBT are these core mindfulness skills to really help us kind of start to answer some of those big questions. And then with impulsivity, not really knowing how to get through a situation, so quickly making a decision and not necessarily, you know, weighing out the pros and cons of that decision, we're going to be using distress tolerance to help with that. And then the labile moods, the ups and the downs, and just kind of feeling like our moods are changing all the time, that's with emotion regulation. And with the interpersonal chaos, you know, just not knowing how to ask for what we want and then feeling resentful when we're not given what we want, and just feeling overall that our relationships are not what we want them to be. And so then we start to look at interpersonal effectiveness, you know, how to start to gain control of our relationships and starting to have relationships that actually feel like they're in line with our values. So then this is just kind of an overview of like the breakdown of mindfulness, distress tolerance, emotion regulation, and interpersonal effectiveness. Just looking at, you know, what we're really looking for in mindfulness is this key idea of non-judgmental mentality, letting go of judgments and being, you know, making decisions that are effective for us in the long run. And this distress tolerance, you know, kind of like what I was saying before, that we really can't change what's happening in the moment. We can't control it. So how do we start to cope with what's our reality, what's in front of us, and start to make decisions that will benefit us in the long run? And just learning how to identify our emotions and work with them and start to reduce, you know, the impulsive behaviors around our emotions, and instead just kind of be with them rather than do something with them. And our interpersonal effectiveness, like I was saying, improving our relationships. So something that's really cool and on the horizon is radically open DBT. And it's radical because what we're asking is for someone who has more of an over-controlled personality, such as with anorexia nervosa, really wanting to control the situation, the environment, our emotions, you know, schedules and so forth, that we're asking to be more open and flexible and allow things to just be as they are rather than feeling like you need to do something about it. And so what they're starting to notice is that this is all kind of brought on not because of feeling emotionally dysregulated or unstable, but instead it's because of feeling this overwhelming emotional loneliness, detachment, feeling isolated from others, and not really feeling as though you can connect. So what we're working on is trying to help someone feel more connected, feel more open, and trying to work on all of these common identifiers of an over-controlled personality to help work towards this feeling of security, connection, and an understanding of oneself. And then here's just a quick kind of little look at one of the skills that we use for our DBT, which is called the pros and cons. And I'm sure you've all done a pros and cons list, and they're wonderful to use, especially for the short term and long term. If you're about to make a change of, you know, stopping restriction, well, you kind of have to look at what are the short-term pros and cons of that and what are the long-term pros and cons of that, because the end voice definitely has reasons to do something in the short term quickly to get rid of any of that anxiety when it comes to restriction or not restricting. So we kind of have to call upon our mind states to understand, well, why would I let go of restriction? Why would I use my skills instead? And ultimately what you start to recognize is because of the long-term pros, you really start to recognize that it's going to help me in the long run if I use my skills over restriction, because there are so many more cons than there are pros to the restriction versus the skills. And so just moving on to the next type of treatment that we do is called acceptance and commitment therapy. And if you're familiar with it, you would understand kind of that acceptance and commitment is accepting it for this is the way that it is, you know, that we are going to accept our reality for what it is, and that avoidance has not been working for us. We're trying to control these unpleasant emotions is not working for us, and that it's actually caused us more suffering in the long run. So you can start to see some similarities with DBT. And instead, we're going to approach it with, I'm not going to attempt to alter or eliminate these difficult internal or external events. And instead, I'm going to just accept that they are difficult thoughts and they are difficult emotions, and I can learn how to work with them so that I can start to gain more of these long-term goals that are more consistent with my values, such as I'm not going to give in to my behaviors because I know that it's going to cause me to isolate. What I really want is to be close with my family and friends, so I'm going to ask for support instead. So the goal is to help ourselves to live a rich, full, and meaningful life with less stress or with less struggle. And that's so much, you know, what DBT is about as well, and same with ACT. And a great kind of catchphrase for ACT is stop the digging. You know, that what we find ourselves in is this ditch, and we have a shovel in our hand, and this is kind of synonymous of the problems in our lives, is this ditch. And the shovel in our hand are the behaviors that we use to try to get out of the ditch. But what we start to realize is that rather than getting out of it, we're just digging deeper and deeper and deeper into the ditch. And so what we're asking for in ACT is to let go of the shovel and start to work with the skills to help us get out of the ditch altogether, and that the digging is really our behaviors, and it's really just getting us nowhere. So what do we do around that? It's the cognitive diffusion, context matters, values, and committed action. So the cognitive diffusion is distancing ourselves from those fear thoughts. And the context matters is the behavior came from somewhere, so something is going to help change it. And values is what's important to us in our lives, and the committed action is, okay, I recognize that this isn't working for me, and I'm going to stop doing it, and I'm going to do this instead. And so we kind of do that, I'm done with that. You know, you're done with those old behaviors, you're done with those old ways of doing things, and you're going to start and try something new. So that accountability and definitely responsibility. So I'm just going to jump ahead and just kind of go to the mindfulness-based interventions. If you have any questions about those extra slides, just let me know, but I feel that I've pretty much covered them. Just for the sake of time. And so the mindfulness-based interventions, Jon Kabat-Zinn is a great pioneer of the mindfulness work in the United States, and he says mindfulness is paying attention in a particular way on purpose in the present moment and non-judgmentally. So it really nurtures a sense of greater awareness of yourself, things around you, how you're feeling, clarity of what you're wanting and what you're feeling and thinking, and acceptance of present moment reality. So kind of accepting, okay, this is what's happening right now. And with all of this awareness that you're gaining with mindfulness, it really allows for change. And there's this dialectic, you know, this saying in DBT that without awareness, you cannot change, and you cannot change without being aware. So it's very important to kind of recognize that we first have to start with mindfulness in order to do any of these things, any of these skills that we're working on. So why does mindfulness work? You know, it definitely calms the nervous system. I don't know if any of you have done a yoga class or have done mindfulness meditation yourself, but I do both yoga and mindfulness, and it definitely calms my nervous system. I totally notice the difference between the days that I do practice and the days that I don't. And so allowing the mind and the body to connect, a lot of times our mind and our body are separate. We don't really check in with our body, and we feel as though our mind is, you know, kind of taking in all this information and our body just has its own jobs to do. But actually they're very much connected, and so how do you kind of build that connection? And it really automatically helps with emotion regulation, centering, and more of that wise thinking that we were talking about with the mind state. So it really improves the ability to use our skills and to cope. So go back to that Penelope, you know, Homer's Penelope story. With mindfulness, it can help us sustain and hold on to the things that we've been working towards. So the treatments that include mindfulness for eating disorders is acceptance and commitment therapy, DBT, experiential and body movement therapies, and cognitive behavioral therapy has actually really done a beautiful job with incorporating mindfulness. And they all have these commonalities and really emphasize, you know, change and help with making those changes. This is one of my favorite poems. It's The Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. And if you have been in treatment in you know, recently or in the past, I'm sure you've come across this. If you haven't, it's a great thing to have in your repertoire of letting go of shame, allowing yourself to just accept that we all struggle, that we all make mistakes, that we all kind of put ourselves through a lot of punishment because of the things that we've done or the things that we wish that we were. And start to just let go of that and accept us for ourselves, for exactly who we are today, and letting go of all the things that we wish were different from our past or wish that, you know, that we could have for the future, and just being, you know, being okay with the present moment. And then The Guest House is also this beautiful poem by Rumi that's kind of allowing ourselves to just invite in our emotions, and that they're our guests, you know, that they don't take over the house. They don't take over us. Instead, we invite them in. We allow them to stay, and they will go. You know, that guests don't stay forever. Then they start to become, you know, more of the live-ins, and this, our emotions are not live-ins. They're those that come and go, and we can start to accept them for just what they are and to see them more with compassion and understanding rather than getting overwhelmed by them. The breathing space is this wonderful meditation that I have led for many patients, especially who are struggling right before meals, you know, struggling with intense emotions that are coming up. And what it is it's just starting to notice your breath as though you are breathing for the first time, like your rib cage rising and falling, noticing each inhalation and exhalation, and then moving towards kind of being in your present body. So where are you thinking? Where is your present body? Like literally in the moment, in a room, what room? What are you thinking? What are your emotions? What are the physical sensations? And then just starting to notice any tension throughout the body and breathing in and out and then encompassing your whole body. And, you know, really starting to just have this overall relaxing sense as you're breathing with your whole body, as you're breathing, you know, kind of as though you're breathing in through your toes and out through your head and out through your head and, you know, down through your toes. And it's a wonderful sensation. You can do it for about 3 to 5 minutes, and it's really fantastic. And so for the anxiety, moving on to our anxiety disorders and the different treatments that we do for our anxiety disorders is, with eating disorders and anxiety disorders, there are these commonalities of these rigidly held beliefs. You know, it's kind of the chicken or the egg when it comes to anxiety disorders and eating disorders, because of just also what the physical consequences of an eating disorder are on the body and the brain. It causes anxiety, and, you know, if you have anxiety disorder to begin with, it's even exacerbated even more. So all of these symptoms are exacerbated regardless. And with that, it really kind of makes it so much more difficult to understand things or see things clearly, because you're constantly on high alert. You know that something is wrong, something must be done. So we kind of look at exposure and response prevention therapy. All of our meals are an exposure. And so how do you start to work with that? How do you start to work with the things that are a challenge and cause even more anxiety for you? So we use our DBT, all the skills that we talked about with dialectical behavior therapy, with emotion regulation and distress tolerance and acceptance and commitment therapy. Okay, this is my reality. I'm here. What do I care about more than this? What's very important to me? What would I be sacrificing if I didn't follow through with this? So kind of keeping yourself in the moment rather than avoiding. And what they've noticed is with exposure and response prevention for anorexia nervosa, it really does reduce eating-related anxiety and allows for an increased intake after these interventions. And we've noticed this ourselves. So here's just a cute, you know, quick cartoon kind of looking at facing your fear head-on, you know, not necessarily wanting to flood ourselves with anxiety, you know, that we don't have to get right on the tightrope right away, but we can do small steps, you know, one rung at a time. So that's just kind of a fun way of remembering that. And just to kind of, you know, like I was talking about with the symptoms of anxiety, there's, with the negative reinforcement cycle, we start to notice that our body and our mind start to work against ourselves when it comes to, you know, these anxious feelings. We start to produce these anxious thoughts, which our body starts to respond as, there's danger ahead and I better do something about it, like I'm being chased by a lion. And so how do we start to, with mindfulness, right, we start to reduce that physical response to anxiety, which that will then in turn reduce that alarm state that our brain starts to go into and start to use our skills to stop the digging and get out. So we do a lot of things with the treatment topics of, the body, emotions, thoughts, actions, and relationships. And we do yoga and body work twice per week because that particular, you know, rewiring of that connection to our body and starting to recognize that we can control in some aspects the way that our body responds to anxiety, and we can start to use skills. And that will then allow us to let go of the control that we're looking for when we're so anxious. And it's so cool with all of these new research coming out about yoga's effect on anxiety. There's definitely this reduction in perceived stress and anxiety, and decreases in physiological arousal, and this helped to increase this heart rate variability. Well, heart rate variability means, if you ever noticed your heart kind of almost skipping beats and getting really, really fast when you're anxious, well, with yoga, what you're starting to do is have more of a consistent heart rate, even when you're not practicing in yoga, so that when you are starting to feel anxious, you can start to use, you know, kind of that, the breathing techniques, you know, the ways that you work within yoga that will then start to create more of a consistent heart rate, which automatically reduces that arousal response. Like back in that negative reinforcement cycle, is that then the body and the mind will start to think like, okay, the lion's chasing me. Instead, it's like, okay, this is my anxiety. I can handle this. And that action, that need for action goes down. One of the things that we do with our patients is cognitive diffusion activity. And one of the things that has come up was a word, you know, choosing a word such as chubby, or choosing a word that's really kind of provoking because of the meaning that we've attached to it. And start to say it in like a funny way, like chubby, 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 chubby. You know, that you're kind of putting this different attitude towards it, this different tone towards it. So you're reducing the meaning, you're breaking up the power of the meaning of this word, and instead just seeing it as a word rather than the shame or the fusion of this belief that we have around a particular word. And that really does help, and it's an exposure within itself to do it with the group. So with the trauma treatments, I'm going to talk in the last 10 minutes about the trauma treatment and the substance abuse treatment that we offer for our patients. And so back to this triphasic treatment model. And so what it is it's first is establishing safety, feeling safe, feeling connected. And then you're going to start to work on the grieving in the morning, you know, the loss of what that trauma took away from you, or what you see it took away from you, and what it may have given you that you don't like. And then slowly but surely reconnecting to the life that you do have, you know, the life in your present moment, and making that connection strong and purposeful. And so this approach is understanding the trauma's impact, establishing and maintaining safety so that you're not giving into behaviors when you're starting to feel this trauma response within your body, kind of like back to that anxiety response and trying to control that. Building a skill set to cope with traumatic symptoms, connecting with others, and approach to avoidant, you know, approaching these avoidant or maladaptive behaviors with a new way, you know, really helping ourselves rather than harming ourselves. One of the activities that we use for trauma is a grounding kit. And so using all five senses, such as a stress ball, mint, lotion, grounding stone, affirmations, even just like a postcard or like a little, you know, flashcard that says the facts, you know, what is the date, what is the time, and where am I? That can be enough of a grounding just to kind of remind yourself that you're not back where your mind is taking you, but instead you're right where you are. And with substance abuse, we don't treat anyone, you know, in our center with a primary substance abuse issue. You know, we do recommend that you do go to a primary substance abuse treatment center to work on, first and foremost, any sort of dependence or addiction that you have, but as like a secondary to substance abuse, to like, let's say, more of a primary eating disorder or mood and anxiety disorder, we first really need to understand what is the reasoning for the drug or alcohol use, you know, what's really going on behind that, and strengthening our motivation to change, you know, that it is scary to let go of something that helps us in the short term but not in the long term, because that short-term relief is so strong that we kind of feel like there's no way that if we don't give in to, you know, using these behaviors that we're never going to feel better. And so how to kind of increase that motivation to make those long-term changes rather than giving into short-term satisfaction, and giving insight into the relationship between our eating disorder and addiction, new ways of coping, and using motivational interviewing and the 12-step model to really start to make changes towards, you know, our larger values and longer-term values. And it is really interesting, the research that they have about anorexia nervosa and bulimia nervosa, you know, are most commonly linked to substance abuse, that 50% of individuals with an eating disorder abused alcohol or illicit drugs compared to 9% of the general population, and 35% of individuals who abused or are dependent on alcohol or other drugs have had eating disorders compared to 3% of the general population. So that in itself says that there's a strong correlation between eating disorders and substance abuse, like whether or not you had a substance abuse issue and then you started to notice that you were wanting to control. And then we were wanting to start to control our, you know, our eating, or we had, I'm sorry, I'm starting to cough. Or we had an eating disorder and then started to use substance abuse. So we use an activity, the cost-benefit analysis, to really go over just like the pros and the cons of what is helping us and what is harming us, and so how to make those changes towards using more of the skills rather than the behaviors. Excuse me one second. Sorry about that. I'm recovering from a cold. So the last slide is just looking at our residential program that does treat eating disorders and mood and anxiety disorders, both as a dual program or as a separate issue. And using all of these things that I was talking about, DBT, exposure and response prevention, ACT, trauma, art therapy, and yoga, and really trying to find this balance between, you know, how to deal with what is the primary and what is the underlying, and really starting to work towards a cohesion of healing and health. And so I hope that kind of gives you an overview of what is out there and what is to be offered in, you know, working towards that recovery that is so hard to sustain, that is so hard to accomplish, but is so important to continue to work on that journey and to be consistent with it and to try many different aspects of treatment to help ensure that you get there and have the support to get there. So thank you so much. I just wanted to leave time for questions. I know I'm about 4 minutes early, which is great, but I just wanted to make sure that if there are any questions or anything that you would like me to go over again or go more in depth with, I'm happy to do so.
And to help us evaluate and improve our program, please complete the following short survey. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in this survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. After I finish reading the entire question and all of the possible responses, please answer by pressing the star key followed by the number that corresponds to your choice. And if you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. One, the session provided me with a better understanding of mental health disorders that co-occur with eating disorders. Press star 1 if you strongly agree, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, star 4 if you strongly disagree. And please stand by while we allow everyone a chance to respond. And our next question. This session educated me on a variety of treatment approaches for mood, anxiety, and eating disorders. Press star 1 if you strongly agree, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, star 4 if you strongly disagree. And once again, we'll pause just a moment so everyone has an opportunity to signal. And moving on. Overall, this session met my expectations. Press star 1 if you strongly agree, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, star 4 if you strongly disagree. And we'll pause a moment. And next, I would recommend this program to others. Please press star 1 if you agree, star 2 if you disagree. And once again, we'll pause a moment so everyone has a chance to signal. And going to our last question, please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with an eating disorder. Press star 1 for I am an individual with an eating disorder, star 2 for I am a family member of someone with an eating disorder, star 3 if I am a health professional, star 4 if other. And we'll pause a moment again so everyone has an opportunity to signal. And that does conclude our survey. Thank you, everyone, for your participation. And now we will go to your questions. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. A voice prompt on the phone line will indicate when your line is open. Please state your name before posing your question at that time. Again, you can press star 1 to ask a question. And we'll pause for just a moment so everyone has an opportunity to signal for questions. And there are no questions in the queue, but I'll just give another reminder. Please press star 1 at this time if you do have a question. That is star 1 for questions. We'll pause just a moment. And just so everyone does have an opportunity to signal if they have a question, please press star 1 at this time if you do have a question. That's star 1. And at this time, there are no questions in the phone queue.
Thank you so much to everyone for attending, and thank you to Ms. Laura Schuster-Eflin for providing such wonderful insights today. If you have specific questions about any of the topics discussed today, please contact the Eating Disorder team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. And please also mark your calendars to join us next month on Tuesday, October 28th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, when the topic will be medical complications with eating disorders. Thank you for attending, everyone, and have a great day.
And again, that does conclude the call, and we would like to thank everyone for your participation.